History has revision at your fingertips. The Korean War. Welcome to this podcast focusing on the first major military encounter of the Cold War. In this podcast, we'll seek to examine the reasons why the United Nations and the United States got so involved, putting it in the context of the Cold War. Then we'll actually have a look at the course of the war and how the fortunes of either side fluctuated until stalemate was finally reached in 1953. The Korean War 1950-53 came at a time of increased tensions between East and West. 1948-49 had seen the Berlin Crisis, the blockade and airlift. In 1949, China had become a communist country, much to America's annoyance. The fear was that Asia would become a complete communist sphere of influence. To make matters worse for the United States, the Soviets had successfully tested their first A-bomb, years ahead of the predicted schedule. The American President Truman was therefore very keen to take a tough line against any more Soviet encroachment as he saw it. What they failed to realize in Washington was that much of the argument in Korea was a local issue and not one born of the global superpower struggle. Yet, from the American point of view, communism equals influence from Moscow. It's Stalin's hand in this. The United States, therefore, saw the need to vigorously pursue its policy of containment to prevent any further communist expansion, whether in Europe, in Asia, or the Americas. In this context, the assault by the North on the South of Korea led to America taking strong military action. Korea, or Chosen, had been under Japanese occupation since 1910. So when the Japanese were defeated in 1945, there was no clear government to replace it. What happened was that using the dividing line of the 38th parallel, Soviet forces would occupy the north of the country, and American forces would occupy the south. It wasn't an ideal solution, as the next 5 years led to many wranglings about how to reunify this country. It was the job of the newly formed United Nations to organize the reunification and free elections to be held in Korea. The United Nations Temporary Commission on Korea, or UNCOK for short, found it very difficult, especially to negotiate with the Soviets in the north. They saw the UN as far too American-influenced and unfair in its actions. When elections were held, they only took place in the South, and Syngman Rhee was elected as the leader of South Korea in 1948. Rhee was staunchly anti-communist and would use whatever methods he could in order to put down what he saw as the threat of communism in the South. He also wanted to see the whole of Korea united with him in charge. Throughout Korea, after the Japanese occupation had finished, people's committees had been set up. These communist-dominated organizations wanted to see the takeover of land and industry by the state. In the north, they were sponsored and supported by the Soviets and were able to form an alternative government under Kim Il-sung. Kim had fought bravely against the Japanese occupation. He was a war hero in many respects, whereas Syngman Rhee in the south had actually only come back to Korea from the United States in 1945. In 1949, the occupying forces of the Soviet Union and the United States left Korea as planned. This left the south dangerously exposed, especially as the United States had given no formal military commitment to South Korea and saw Korea outside the United States' own defensive perimeter, based upon Taiwan and Japan. It was in this context that Kim Il-sung, after months of skirmishing on the 38th parallel, launched the full-scale invasion of the South on the 25th of June, 1950. If Korea was going to be united, it would be by force, and to Kim Il-sung, it would become communist. The United States considered the North to be the only and clear aggressor in this case. They therefore decided that they needed to launch a strong response as part of the policy of containment. The United States had been wavering in terms of its military commitment to defending the world against communism up to this point. The military and the State Department of the United States had produced NSC 68, a document from the National Security Council saying the United States needed to maintain or even increase its military commitment. Korea gave the pretext to the president and to Congress that a more vigorous and expensive foreign and defense policy was needed. Truman was keen to act quickly in order to silence the anti-communist campaigners at home. Within 2 days, he had made an unlimited commitment to South Korea that the United States would defend it. It was then at that stage that he brought in the United Nations to ratify America's actions. Truman's task at the United Nations was made much, much easier by the fact that the communist Chinese were never admitted and that the USSR were boycotting the organization as a result of preventing communist China from gaining a seat on the Security Council. That left the road open to the United States to ratify its decision. The United Nations, it has to be remembered, was also keen to avoid accusations of weakness and appeasement. After the failure of the League, the UN didn't want to be tainted with the same brush. As a result, what they saw in Korea was an act of clear aggression, North Korea against the South, and as a result of that, collective action, collective security was needed to react and respond and restore the status quo. The UN agreed to military intervention, and 16 countries signed up to become involved. The United States, though, was by far the most significant of those powers, and it would be they who would be spending the money in order to achieve the job. The UN gave the US president the authority to carry out actions on their behalf. Truman then passed the role on to General Douglas MacArthur, war hero in the Pacific Theater and head of the US occupation of Japan since 1945. With the United Nations backing, that was seen as a clear propaganda victory for the United States. It seemed that the world's community was on their side against the encroaching forces of communism, which it saw as being directed by Stalin from Moscow. The Korean War can be divided into four general stages. The North's advance into the South, the US counterattack pushing into the North, the Chinese invasion pushing down to the 38th parallel again, and then, for the last 2 years of the war, a stalemate along the 38th parallel. As mentioned, the first part was a very successful invasion by the North of the South. They managed to push past the capital, Seoul, and push the South Korean forces all the way back to the southeast corner, what was called the Pusan Perimeter. It was at this stage that the US-UN forces started to arrive in great numbers. And instead of just pushing back from Pusan, MacArthur launched an audacious seaborne attack behind North Korean lines. 261 ships landed at Incheon. This effectively cut off North Korea's supply lines to its frontline troops, and as a result, they were forced into retreat. By the 30th September 1950, North Korean forces had been forced above the 38th parallel and back into North Korea. It is at this stage that some argue that the UN should have stopped the United States from doing any further action. After all, the first objective of containing communism, of resisting aggression, had been achieved. But MacArthur, flush with success, persuaded Truman, who in turn persuaded the United Nations, that the war should be pursued into the North and that Korea should be reunited under Syngman Rhee, with United Nations military backing. By October, it seemed like the UN forces had free rein of the country. Pyongyang, the capital of the North, had been taken, and the forces had pushed all the way to the Chinese frontier, the Yalu River. This made Chairman Mao and the communist Chinese leadership increasingly concerned. They didn't know what the intentions of the United States or the United Nations were. Perhaps they wanted to pursue the war further and actually restore what they saw as capitalism to China as well. It has to be remembered, there was no formal diplomatic contact between the communist Chinese and the United States. The Americans only recognized nationalist China, Taiwan, under Chiang Kai-shek, and Chairman Mao and the Chinese leadership got most of their information about what the Americans were doing from reading the New York Times. With American talk of rolling back communism, it seemed like China was a target, and as a result of that, on the 27th of November 1950, about 200,000 Chinese volunteer troops joined the North Koreans in pushing back the US-UN forces. The scale of the Chinese involvement took MacArthur and the US and UN by surprise. They were sent into panic. It was even suggested that nuclear weapons should be used against strategic Chinese targets in order to try and restore their advantage. This option, though, came in for deep criticism from the United States allies. And conventional military fighting continued. By early 1951, the communists had again pushed below the 38th parallel. By this stage, though, the Chinese and North Korean advance was showing strains. 400,000 Chinese troops needed to be supplied, and the technology available to them was limited. The superior bombing technology of the United States enabled the US-UN forces to then push back the frontier to the 38th parallel. It was at this stage that MacArthur fell out with Truman. MacArthur still wanted to use nuclear weapons against strategic Chinese targets in order to force the advantage back into the North. But Truman refused and dismissed his commander-in-chief on the ground. He was replaced by the more pliable General Matthew Ridgway. The war still continued, though, for another 2 years, with very little in terms of movement on the ground. The Americans continued to bomb targets in the north. Communists launched guerrilla operations against the south. Peace talks opened, then broke down. The war, it seemed, was going on interminably, and interest for the war was running out in the United States. Peace talks faltered over where the demarcation line between North and South should be, and over prisoners of war. It wasn't until the death of Stalin and the replacement of Truman by Eisenhower that there was enough political will to ensure that the peace talks succeeded. In 1953, the Peace of Panmunjom essentially returned Korea to the state it had been in 1950. So, in 3 years of fighting resulting in stalemate, what had really been achieved? In those 3 years, 4 million people had died, the majority of them North Koreans, civilians and soldiers. About 1 million South Koreans had also died, and on top of that, 1 million Chinese. For the Americans, they'd lost about 54,000 troops, more than they'd lose in any conflict in the post-war era, except for Vietnam. In terms of the impact on Korea, it remained divided and desperately poor. 5 million people were left homeless by this conflict. In the South, Syngman Rhee maintained his authority until 1960, when he was ousted as a result of rigging elections. In the North, Kim Il-sung continued as the communist dictator until his death in 1994, only to be replaced by his own son, Kim Jong-il. Neither side fully accepted the fact that Korea wasn't reunited. Both of them continue to show tension towards each other, and it has only been very recently that improvements in relations have seemed to gather pace. The Chinese emerged from this conflict having suffered terrible losses, but in some respects it served the fledgling communist China well. It put them on the international map and showed that they had power and influence, particularly in the East Asia region. This is in marked contrast to the Soviet Union, who, although they provided supplies of military equipment to North Korea and to the Chinese, didn't take any full active role within the war. Had they done so, then it would have been a very different sort of conflict. The Soviets therefore gave away some ground to the Chinese in terms of showing leadership and direction of the communist world, particularly in the region of East Asia. Soviet willingness to participate is in direct contrast to the American perception of what had actually caused this conflict. For the Americans, they saw the Korean War as part of their containment and rollback policy against the encroaching communism in Asia. Korea cemented American foreign policy and defense policy. An increase in expenditure threefold was the result of involvement in Korea. It meant that the USA would maintain its strong guard during the Cold War against what it saw as Soviet espionage and Soviet influence where they felt it shouldn't be present. Korea taught the USA that they needed to be flexible and ready for whatever challenge communism might present them with. And because of Korea, they had the resources to be able to do so. For the United Nations, the Korean War was a mixed bag. Some argue and complain that it was far too much under American influence, and as a result of that, it lost respect of other new countries from the Third World. But it did show that it could resist aggression in a way that the League of Nations never could. One thing was for certain, though. The Soviet Union would no longer boycott the Security Council and let America get away with things. As a result, in some respects, the Korean War made sure that the United Nations would never be the tool of US foreign policy again. Indeed, it led to the neutralization of the UN when coming up against superpower conflict. Goodbye, and good luck.